sources. Further breakdown of information about the marketing costs. As I mentioned, 51 million for the continuing business, slightly less than the same comparable number last year. We have recruited in 2006 more than 263,000 FTDs, what we call first-time depositors for the continuing business. And the CPA for 2006 was stable at $183 per acquisition. At the bottom chart, you can see the relative breakdown, both in terms of actual absolute spend per the main channels, affiliates, offline, online, and other, and where this has moved between 05 and 06. And you can see there's been a slight migration into increase in our offline operations and marketing spend on the account of the other channels. Customer bonuses, again, increased bonus efficiency. POCU bonuses reduced to 11% in 06 compared to 16%. Casino bonuses, which are by their nature are higher than the purpose, reduced from 31% to 37% for the entire year. And we expect to see the bonuses pretty much under control, perhaps below these ratios. The balance sheet. Very few things to talk about the balance sheet. Current asset cash and cash equivalents, 114 million compared to 62 at the end of last year. Nothing much to report here. Cash flow statement. We've generated from operating activities 84.5 million. Interesting number for you guys, for the analysts, is the 3.8 million depreciation. We've paid the dividend so far before the final dividend, 28.7 million. And again, the cash equivalent for the end of the year is 114. A very strong cash generated business overall. The next slide shows you continued strong real money registrations from the continuing operations. Registrations increased 35% and reached 3.6 million at the end of the year. Compound annual growth rate of 10%, more than 10% since Q1 02, which is very impressive. Poker retention chart. There's a growing core of dedicated long-term customers. As you can see from the chart, about 45% of rake, which is basically income from ring games and tournament fees, in Q4 06 from customers joining from Q4 05 and earlier is about 45%. These are basically the bottom layers of this chart represent the continuing sticky money that continues to flow into the system from old players. Another angle to look at the way we measure retention is basically to look at how much money was continued to be left on the table from active players in January 06. As you can see, 12 months later, still 46% of that money is still being generated. For the majority of 06, it's slightly better than 05 and has stabilized slightly below the 05 level at the end of the year. Casino retention, again, the layer chart. Our casino business is more mature, and you can see that the percentage of money which is being generated by sticky older players is slightly higher than the poker, about 53%. Again, the similar chart with the casino retention, the same measurement, how much money contributed by January actives, how much of that was contributed in December. And you can see that was about 38% at the end of 2006. The next nine slides, I'm going to go quickly and review our Q1 KPIs. There's been a change which I would like to explain to you. In January, blackjack was introduced into our poker, and further convergence into all games onto one platform is well underway. We had to adjust the KPIs to avoid some distortions, and we took a decision that income from any casino game, irrespective of any platform played, is going to be counted towards casino. If you're going to play roulette through the backgammon client, it's going to be considered casino. And as a result, we needed to change the way we count the active players, because otherwise there would be a mismatch between the revenue and the number of active players. So basically, we count an active player for the casino, for this instance, anybody who played any casino game anywhere. Of course, if he played casino game and blackjack in poker, he'll only be counted once. So the result is a quite significant increase in the casino active players for this quarter. The first set of three sides I'm going to show you is what we call the combined KPIs, which is or the blended KPIs for the entire business. Net gaming revenue in Q1 was 46.9 million. It's 16% increase from Q4 06, a very, very strong increase. That compares to 9% between Q4 05 to Q1 06. Compound growth rate of 7.9% from Q1 05. The next element is basically the increase in combined active customers. That increased in Q107 to almost 206,000. Before you ask, this is a unique measure, so anybody who played on any of our games or any of our platforms is only counted once. That shows a 9% increase from Q406. And the result of dividing the NGR by the number of active players is what we call the combined quarterly NGR per active player. It has increased to $228 in Q107, 6% increase over the previous quarter, 9% increase on a year ago, which again demonstrates both increase in NGR and in active players and the yield per player on a group level. For the casino KPIs, casino net gaming revenue rose to 26 million, 17% increase from Q4, a very strong increase. You can see that on the chart. It's unprecedented in our recent history, at least. Next slide shows you the casino active customers, and you can see on the right-hand side the sharp increase in casino active customers to 70,700, 71% increase. And as I measured, as I explained before, we now count as casino active also those poker players who played the blackjack in the poker. The result, the quarterly net gaming revenue per casino active member shifted down to 367. But again, let's not forget, for the casino, any way you measure it, and for the business as a whole, the entire net gaming revenue increased on all counts and measures. For the poker, again, strong growth in Q1, almost 21 million net gaming revenue in Q1, 14% increase over the previous quarter and 17% from a year ago. And this is after stripping out from the poker the blackjack revenue, which was moved to the casino. In terms of poker's active numbers, the poker active numbers increased to a bit more than 168,000, 14% increase from Q4, 25% increase from a year ago. And when you look at the quarterly net gaming revenue per poker member, it remains exactly as it was in the previous quarter at 124. The NGR growth exactly commensurate with the increase in active numbers. Over to you, Gigi.
Well, I just lost the bet to Aviad because I told him there's no way he can run through all that in less than 20 minutes. But I guess he did. Okay, so to start with, there are tons of numbers here, and we can spend hours talking about these numbers and all these analysis. I mean, some of these graphs take hours just to understand what they say. So we will have time for questions afterwards, but I think the key thing is that this is the first time ever that we're reporting basically an increase on all measures, that we're seeing the business grow at all accounts. We're seeing basically not just very good growth on profit in 2006, which was a mixed year with U.S. and without U.S., but also very strong growth in Q1 that indicate that the business continues to grow also without the United States, and that the refocusing of the business that we've done after closing the United States in October has actually been successful. All of them are good figures, the best ever we ever had, and I think that this is, before we run into what made us successful, this is important to say, we ran through the numbers. It's not because we're trying to make you not look at them. They're all great numbers, just that the highlights are very simple. We have grew dramatically in profit before tax. We have grew in revenue. We have grew in revenue from outside the United States, and the growth continues in Q1. Now what I want to do is spend the rest of the time talking about what made us successful and give you a bit of a glimpse on what was the strategy in 2006 and what are the focuses for 2007, because I'm quite aware that the first question you ask is what made these results and what will continue delivering growth in 2007. So this is what we're going to spend time on now. These are the cornerstones of our strategy, and the best thing I can say about them is that they haven't changed dramatically ever since the company started working. I think we've been executing better on them recently, especially after closing the United States with a lot of focus. But in terms of the principles, they've been around for years, and they are very clearly and very simply thinking global as a global brand, but acting local in order to increase our geographical reach. Offering an enhanced and innovative offering to our customers, which is critical for the way they experience being our members. State-of-the-art integrated marketing, which we'll talk about in a second. Developing and delivering on our customer intimacy. Having a market-leading customer service. Being a very efficient and focused organization. And being an employer of choice. Now, we don't have the time. I can speak for hours about these, so we're only going to touch on a few of them. But if you have questions on any of them afterwards, we'll find the time to answer. So the first thing, of course, is thinking global while acting local. And this has been such a key because if you look at the way we grew after closing the United States, we could have not done that if we did not have the right infrastructure to grow from just the U.S. to all across the world. And being a global brand, being 888.com is great, and this is what we are. But the local flavor of the offering and the local flavor of the marketing are critical if we want to grow in each separate market. And you can't just say we are 888 and there's one 888 for everybody, because there are different languages, there are different games, there are different offerings. You need to treat the customers differently. If you don't do that, you don't go geographically. So what have we done in 2006? The first thing is that we completely changed our organizational structure. After we closed the United States market, we basically turned our operation upside down to focus it around specific regions. And what we have today, we have a marketing plan per country with a person responsible for the results of that country, and that country measured basically at the P&L level. So today we know exactly which one of our countries are more profitable. We know where we want to focus more. We know where we want to work. We know where we want to invest more money. And this has made us very successful in basically growing the business. The next thing is that we've added some local touches. So today we support poker in seven languages. We support casino in 11 languages. We give support in the call center in 11 languages, basically doing all of that so that people coming and wanting to be our customers can get a localized experience and not somebody answering them just in English with an English client and then basically somebody in Italy sitting down and saying, well, that's not the experience I'm looking for. And the last thing, which is just a hint of what we're planning in terms of geographic expansion and local focus, is that we've acquired the first ever available local license in Europe, being in Italy. It's a sportsbook license. This is something that we've done late in 2006, and we're basically going to activate this in the coming month. And this is just a flavor of whenever we will have an opportunity to be more local and more focused on any specific geography that we think we can be successful in, we'll do that. These are just some samples. There's going to be lots of examples in the presentation. I'm not going to focus very long on them, but we have made campaigns in by far more languages and more markets this year. We've made more localization. We have changed our client, the software client, to accommodate more local needs of each market, including different graphics, different colors, different propositions. And this is something we'll continue doing. And in 2007, you will see us focusing on doing that even more. What does even more mean? It's not just more languages. It's not just more markets. Even more means that from just having a localized proposition, we're going to move to also having local games. Now, what's the difference? The difference is that if you got a localized poker, it means that you've got a poker client that is in different languages in different markets. But a local offering means that when you're going after the Japanese market, you're going with pachinko. And when you're going after the Chinese market, you're going with mahjong. And when you're going after each one of the markets, you're looking at what are the favorite local games. Now, this is, of course, the cornerstone of everybody's strategy, getting more games and getting more relevant games. And in order to be able to achieve this quickly, we've invested throughout the last end of 2006 into opening our infrastructure for third-party games. What does that mean? It means that today we can give developers software development kit and tell them, please develop games for us based on this software development kit. Why do we need to do that? Because at the end of the day, we want to grow faster than what our own R&D can actually deliver without recruiting more and more and more people. And because there are some off-the-shelf games that we can use, and because there are companies that can help us in doing that, we're opening our ecosystem to enable integration of third parties. What you'll see us doing through 2007 is introducing many more games which are more relevant for local markets, because this is what's going to help us grow in these local markets. The second cornerstone, which of course ties into the first one, is to have an innovative offering. And the reason is clear. The more innovative your offering, the more money people spend with you, the more customers you get stay with you, the more loyalty you see. And in 2006, we've basically improved our existing offering quite significantly. We've introduced what we call the Poker Extreme, or the Poker Uplift, as it's called internally, which is a new version of poker, which we think is one of the best, not saying the best, but one of the best pieces of software around in terms of poker. We've added at least one new game every month to our casino offering. We've built infrastructure for quick games introduction and integration, as I've said before. We've launched our mobile product, which is now up and running with roulette, blackjack, and slots. We've integrated blackjack into poker, which is a cornerstone into unified offering that we'll touch on in a second. And we've completed backgammon, which is now available to our customers. So all that are 2006 achievements. And if you look at some of the new games that we're seeing, you can see here some of the new video slots. You can see the face of the backgammon. You can see on the right-hand side the new poker client, which has some innovative feature like a table that turns itself to position you in your favorite position and stuff like that, which make it more personal and more fun to play. And if we go to the next slide, you'll see that our offering is going to actually be changed quite dramatically also in 2007. With the first thing is a move from what we call having different games to a single multi-dimensional gaming environment. And that is basically a change in the way we think the market is behaving today. What we're looking for is not just to have all the games available on one wallet, but basically putting all the games in a single software client. That single software client is the only software you need to download. And in that entertainment center, you basically have all the games you may want to play available for you. Now, the next layer on top of that is that, of course, it is personalized, which means that two players do not necessarily get the same look and feel, although all games are available to everyone. So if I'm a serious, heavy poker player, I'm not going to get the flashy colors of casino. Even if I want to play casino, it will look like a poker lobby. But if I'm a casino player and I want to try poker, it may not look as serious and professional as some of the poker lobbies around, because that's not the experience I'm looking for. And this is going to be determined, this orientation is going to be determined by the campaign that you came from and by the kind of games that you play. And there's going to have lots of more things in it, which are personalization. So, for example, your favorite games are going to be introduced up front. So the games that you usually play are going to be available to you. But in addition to this, you're going to get recommended games, which is similar to the Amazon experience of people that bought this also bought this. So people that play your favorite games also enjoy this game. And clearly, we're going to incentivize people to try new games and move people to the games we want them to play, etc. And this is all available because in the same software client, we're going to have all games. Clearly, this also means a shared wallet, because the same money is going to be available for all games. It means that we're taking off the barriers between the different games. It's no longer going to be separate websites, separate loyalty points, separate everything. It's going to be a single gaming environment in which you can play everything. You have seen how successful Blackjack and Poker was for us. We already have now available for all customers almost all casino games, 19 more casino games available for all poker clients in the poker client. And at the end of the next quarter, we're going to have all games available for everyone. So if you look today, this is the way the poker client, this is one of the views of the way the poker client looks today. And basically, this is before we, this is one of the last versions. Well, you can see that from the poker client, you can click directly into playing backgammon and directly into playing casino games. And in the future, as we introduce more games, this is going to be available also through other games directly from the poker client, and the other way around, from the casino client, which is, at the end of the day, as you now understand, it's not a casino client. It's the same client with a different facade on it. You're going to be able to access all other games. This has, just to give you a perspective, not just marketing benefits, not just loyalty benefits, not just one-stop shop benefits, cross-selling and upselling, but it also has some technological and cost benefit because we only need to maintain one single environment rather than maintaining different software clients that each one of them requires different maintenance, etc. This is the unified offering. This is a key initiative for 2007, and it's quite different than what's offered in the market today. The second thing is that in this entertainment environment or gaming environment that we're talking about, we're going to add a few layers. One of these layers is going to be an entertainment focus, which means that clearly we're going to continue making money from gaming, but to enhance loyalty, to enhance retention, and to enhance the feeling of being an 888 customer, an 888 member, we're going to give a few other things which are not just gaming. One of these things is going to be entertainment. We've just completed a huge survey of all of our customers to determine exactly what content our customers would like to get. And being that this content usually is not easily sourced by them, and that we can centrally source it for them at relatively very low cost compared to the cost of marketing in our industry, we're going to provide these customers with free content, which is just what they want. We've asked them, what would you like to get and what would make you spend more time with us? They told us, and we're going to give them exactly that. So one of these things, not surprisingly, is going to be football, because many of our customers are interested in football. And just imagine how compelling it's going to be if you're going to get free football content, which is premium content, which in other places you need to pay for, but now you can get it for free in the same software client. This will enhance loyalty. This will enhance the feeling of membership. This will enhance the experience of being an 888 customer. And it's also going to make our life a lot easier in marketing. The cost of doing that is dramatically lower than the cost of actually spending more money on campaigns, on some of these campaigns. So this is just one additional layer that we're going to put in to make it more compelling to be a customer of 888. Second phase, of course, could include some more innovative stuff. For example, if you're a demo customer, you may be still be able to get the content, but then it'll be sponsored and subsidized by getting advertising. So you will get the content, but there will be advertising. You're a paying customer, you don't get this. You're not paying customer, you have to get the content, but get advertising. Second thing could be, for example, additional top premium content. You're a VIP customer, you get this for free. You're a normal customer, you need to pay for it. And guess what? We already have a wallet with money of these people. If we want to sell them the content, they can easily, by one click, actually buy this content. So we're not looking at this as becoming a new huge revenue source, but we're looking for this to cover for itself in terms of cost and basically turn us into a much more compelling proposition than just being a gaming company. So we started by saying all games are going to be available to everyone and the money could be used by everyone for every game, and you're going to get your preferred games up front and recommendations. The next thing is that we're going to add an entertainment layer on top of it, in which you're going to get the right content that is interesting for you. And just remember, we own tons of content. All the football teams that we sponsored, the snooker champion, we own content that we're not using today. We're going to use this content, make it available for people. This is actually leveraging some of our assets. And this is going to be, we think, quite material. The next layer on top of this is the community. I think that the success of social networks across the internet is something that is undisputable. I think that we all understand that a community feeling is what you need to create if you want to generate more loyalty. And what we're adding, we have today, of course, like everybody else, we have chat around the poker table. This is very common. We want to go a lot further than this. We want to give people the ability to make friends. When I play with somebody around the table and I enjoy it, I want to ask him, can I make you my friend online? He says, yes, I put him into my messenger. Next time he's playing, I know that he's playing. The next step, of course, is for me to tell him, well, why don't we have a private table in which I can bring some friends, you can bring some friends. With time, you get to the point in which I've got my buddies, my mates, in my client. And now guess what? If somebody else comes with a better bonus, do I now go and leave? Or do I stay because all my mates already play here? I know when they're online. I get very good community feeling. I maybe have my own personal space in which all my achievements are shown. Do I now go somewhere else just because there's a different piece of software which is a lot nicer in graphics, which happens every once in a while? The answer is no. Community generates loyalty, and we think that we've got all the thing it needs that we need in order to generate the right community that will keep people staying with us and playing for longer. So all games, entertainment layer, community layer, all of this will be available by the end of 2007, making us, at the end of the day, what we would like to be, a community of people looking to have fun online, which is critical. Not just gaming, not just videos, of course, but a community of people. Money still flowing from gaming, but loyalty generated not just from having great games. And this is our concept. This is what we've started, basically, and this is what we're going to deliver. In addition, the next thing that we've asked our customers is, what do you want more? And what they said is, you know, our life is converging. Television, mobile, internet, these are all mixing. We want to be able to access everything everywhere. And I can talk for hours about convergence. It's, you know, it's one of these buzzwords. But clearly, when we have somebody that plays with us online, we want to have them already available also to play through the mobile. We want to have them playing also through television. We want to have them playing through any other means that will enable them to play more rather than do other things. What are these other access points? So that we've announced already mobile, and mobile is working well for us. And we are going now into airlines. I'm sure some of you might have picked that up, but we've signed a deal with a company called DTI. They're the largest provider of in-flight entertainment systems. And they're basically all their casino-like games, and today casino-like games exist in all major airlines, are going to be branded 888. And whenever this is going to be available for online gaming, which is going to be relatively soon because there's going to be internet connections on planes, then this will also be for real money games. And we're going. This is a real estate that we have now. We already have this running, by the way, with another company in British Midlands for demo play. And again, when they'll have online, we'll have this running for real money as well. And we're also looking into television. Now, television is a big word, of course. You wouldn't find us buying a channel and trying to pick up having an 888 channel in channel 888 in Sky or something like that, although this did come up as an idea. But we're looking at what we call focused distribution scenarios, which means that we're looking at very specific assets, which are good real estate assets on television that will give us the right access. I can't give you more detail now, but you will see us doing things on television in 2007, which we think will be significant. We aim to have at least two more access points, meaning platforms through which you can access our games, which are not strictly internet, by the end of the year. So this is our offering. Again, moving from just single games with no community, no entertainment, all the way to a single gaming environment with entertainment, with the ability to access from all across the world, and not just all across the world, but from different platforms as well, and adding the community layer on it. We're going to do that, and we think this is going to be material in our growth. The next cornerstone, of course, is, and I'm sorry that I'm throwing all these things at you at the same time, but we're just going to rush through it. The next cornerstone is marketing. I think we've always been known for very good marketing in the industry, and we'll continue delivering on this marketing. What we've done in 2006, we continued investing in the brand, but with a lot more focus on what we call direct return, direct response activities, and just proper branding, because we've got to enough branding critical mass that we can start doing things that return more money even. And that's how you've seen the ratio of marketing to NGR go down. We've initiated first viral marketing activities. I'll tell you a bit about that in a second, which are a lot cheaper marketing activities, of course. We've produced our first ever customer magazine, 8, that you'll see in a second. We've continued investment in retention and loyalty enhancement activities, and we've infrastructure completed to enable strategic partnership. We'll talk about all this in a second. And if we look at the achievements of 2006, clearly, brand recognition, the UK is just phenomenal. We're talking about the third most recognized gaming brand in the UK after Ladbrokes and Will Hill. It's a decent place to be in, especially since we're not that old a brand. And this is, of course, paying back in growth and in money. If we look at international campaign, we just had an infinite amount of international campaigns all across the globe, through all the big portals, through all the big websites, anything you can think of, we've basically done this year. Sports sponsorship and TV content, we've continued with innovative sponsorships. Sevilla is doing very well for the time being. We've continued with World Snooker Championship, which delivered great returns. We continued producing our own poker content that at the end of the day we broadcast around the world. And of course, all this content will be now available through our video player, which is of course leveraging the assets that we have. But we've done that, and this has continued to be profitable. Just to give you a hint, we're measuring each one of these not as a generic branding exercise. We measure each one of these for direct returns, which means that each one of them will usually have a specific proposition, and that's why we can measure whether people come from World Snooker Championship or come from football or come from anything else, because we don't do anything without measuring it. And whatever we continue doing, you can assume that it's profitable. The first magazine, called 8, is out, was sent to around 100,000 people. has been an incredibly profitable thing for us, actually. Again, each one of it, the magazine had specific propositions that we could measure directly. It's a very, very good magazine, actually. If any of you would like to get one, please let us know at the end. It's actually quite good as a magazine general reading in general, but it's, of course, focused on the kind of thing that we know our customers are interested in. We'll be doing the next one relatively shortly. And it's the kind of thing that enhances the feeling of being a member of 888. Viral marketing, it's a big buzzword. It's not yet delivering as much as normal marketing, unfortunately. But we started doing this. You can take these 21clips.com and flashones.com and have a look at them. They're just two of many more things that we're doing on viral marketing. Go in, you'll see that these are not 888 branded, but they try to get you into 888 in other ways. Look into them. Clearly, these are not the major things that are bringing customers, but we're planting more and more seeds like that. And each one of them costs very little, brings us, at the beginning, small value, and some of them would pick up more. And these are the kind of things that we're doing today to increase customer acquisition. Search engine positions are clearly material in the way we work. These are just examples. We are well positioned in search engines all across the world, in all languages, in all ways. You can see here the search phrases and where we're coming. If you look for online poker, we come first. If you look for poker, we come first. If you look for online casino, which I think is in the Nordics, we come first. You look for online gambling, we come first. And there are many more. We've got a team of people working on this. This is a very important part of online marketing, unfortunately. You can't just put banners up and expect for everything to be okay. And we're doing this, I think, in a very good way. This is something we improved dramatically in the last year, and it brought great results. What is the focus to 2007, other than continuing, of course, to deliver great marketing? Strategic partnership is one of these things. And this is basically to say, not that we think that 888.com is not a good brand, but 888.com is a very strong brand with a very, very strong presence, but a very, very strong and clear brand messages. These brand messages are not necessarily good for everyone. So when we want to reach other segments, we want to grow outside the basic customer base of 888.com, one of the ways to do that is through getting strategic partners. And these strategic partners is very similar to the MVNO concept in telecom, which means we're not giving them software, but we're giving them a turnkey operation. We're looking at their assets, and their assets could be either captive audience or a huge install base or some dedicated marketing channels or a very strong brand or retail presence or anything. We're looking for the right partners. When we find one, we give them a turnkey proposition, which is powered by 888, but it's not just the software, it's all of it, it's the entire operation. We take a significant share of the revenue, and we basically, through that, generate propositions which are better to segments that we can't access directly. The first one that we signed is Riley's. I think you've all heard of this. Riley's is a network of clubs that used to be snooker club, but today are also poker clubs. And today, a Riley member has a poker table and poker tournaments in the clubs. What we said is, here is somebody with retail presence. Here is somebody with a strong brand for their audience. Here is somebody that has association with poker. What we're going to build together is a proposition that will enable people to play both online and offline. You start a tournament offline, you continue it online. There's a tournament offline, but the qualifiers are online. There is a joint ranking of the best player per club, and this is done on a mixture of offline plays and online plays. And this is something that is a totally different customer experience. Nobody else can deliver that because nobody else has these club presence across the UK. They have more than 500,000 captive audience customers, and we expect this to be very significant in terms of recruiting customers. This is something that we're just finishing implementing. And by the end of the year, we'll be announcing at least two more significant deals similar to Riley's in the UK or other regions. And this is something that we feel is going to be enhancing our growth, not just because it is another way of getting customers, but because this is quantum leaps to get to new segments that is going to be very difficult for us to just enter ourselves. Another focus for 2007 is what we call the New Players Club. This New Players Club is basically a totally brand new state-of-the-art customers club, very similar to what you get in the top airlines. What we had to date is basically a VIP club that was dedicated for casino players. We had very minor offering to poker players in terms of VIP club. What we're launching today is a four-tier club that will include lots of benefits like faster points accumulation, a tangible gift, free tournaments, and all other tangible benefits that people love. Again, we've surveyed with many of our customers to understand exactly what they want. We've looked into some of the other loyalty plans in the industry, but also outside the industry, and I think we picked best practice from all of them to what we call the max. And one of the things which is going to be quite unique is that all your points from all your games are going to be in the same club, and all your games are going to serve toward getting you more benefits, more gifts, etc. So basically, this is connected directly into the unified offering, because it's not a separate club for poker, a separate club for casino. Any bit that you spend with us is going to go directly into your benefits. And we do feel that this is going to be quite enhancing in terms of loyalty. Also, as I said before, we listen to our customers and we give them what they want, so we expect this to be quite successful. This is the way it looks. The sharp-eyed ones might see that while I said four layers, there are six layers here. This is not a mistake. There are two confidential layers that I'll ask you to keep confidential, because they're like VIP, top VIP layers, etc., the kind of layers that you don't get to directly. This is all going to be, I think, extremely exciting. And the first thing which is a life-changing is that, first of all poker players are going to be members immediately. And the second thing is that people that are even just beginners are going to immediately have a level of membership. You don't just need to play a little bit and then become a member. You become a base level member the minute you join, and then immediately you know what you need to do more in order to get to a higher level, which I think is the right way to build a club. Rushing through the rest of it, customer intimacy is something that I've spoken a lot about in the previous presentation, and I think it continues to be one of our strongest advantages in the market. In 2006, we completed the implementation of a brand new state-of-the-art data warehouse. I think I come from the telecom market originally, definitely a lot better than anything I've seen in any telecom operator, with better data mining capabilities. It's not just that we have more data on our customers, but we also look into it a lot more and we analyze it a lot more. We've continued investing in various tools that will enable us to understand this data a lot better. So the Panorama Viewer, which basically enables people to get a glimpse of the status of the business in many, many, many different aspects of it immediately online from anywhere, anytime, as a management tool. And the Business Object Tool, which is basically enables us to do more queries and more analysis and more research on our data a lot quicker, have been implemented in 2006, and we expect them. They already start delivering a lot better analysis than we had before, and what we had before is probably the best in the industry. We've completed a few more detailed market studies. We have a methodology. We have a team that go into a market and basically through focus groups and online surveys, etc., come back with a detailed market analysis. We've done this for a few markets in 2006. I'm clearly not going to tell you which ones, because these are going to be very focused markets for the coming years. But we now continue doing this all across our target markets, and that's proved to be extremely successful for us. And basically in 2007, we're going to continue learning what our customers want and acting on it. I think that all the things that I've told you that we're going to do are basically reactions to what we heard from our customers, and I think this is the best way for any company like us to work. Customer service, if there's one thing that we're known for in the market, is having the best customer service. I think this has also been measured various times. We continued providing a phenomenal SLA throughout 2006. I mean, I don't need to run through the figures, but these are figures that many operators in many other areas would kill for. And we're continuing delivering this great SLA. I mean, compare this to your average service provider in other domains, and you'll see that this is quite phenomenal. We've implemented many additional technological systems to basically give even more, even better service, and to control service levels even better. We've continued improving our CRM back office systems, and we probably maintain what is the best customer service in the industry, and 2007 is going to be no different. We're going to continue delivering great customer service. And last thing, in terms of becoming a focused, efficient, and effective organization, we'd like to think that the results speak for themselves. But just a few comments. We've completely rebuilt our cost base and took out lots of costs in various areas, because the business is now different without the United States. We've made the painful necessary headcount reduction when we closed the U.S. market. Around 23% of our workforce had to leave, and we basically are now more fit to our scale. There's new purchasing and budget control process across the company, which is delivering what it needs to. And in Israel, where is our R&D factory, we basically moved to a whole new building. Before that, because we were growing quickly, we were in separate buildings, which was not very effective. We're now in a new building, the entire company together, which is proving to be by far more effective. We'll continue reducing costs in 2007 and improving our operational margins. This is our focus. couple of words on our Bingo acquisition. So organic growth is not enough. We want to grow quicker than that, and therefore we're looking for acquisitions. The first acquisition the company ever made is of the bingo business of a company called Globalcom. It is the leading UK bingo network. It has 68 of the 137 currently UK-facing bingo sites. It's got long-lasting relationship with all the leading bingo affiliates and portals. It currently operates under license from Kanawaki, but it's going to move into our license. They had 28,000 real money registered users since inception and 10,000 active in the last 3 months, which is very high retention, very normal to the bingo business. They're a very good operator. 52% of the revenues come from bingo, 48% come from instant and casino games. And the reason we chose to go for that is because it not only closes a hole in our product offering by adding bingo, but also it basically enables us to touch a whole new segment of the population that we don't touch. If you know, offline gaming is probably split 50-50 between women and men. If you look at casinos, it's 50-50 at the end of the day, although it may not always look like that. If you look at online gaming, majority of companies report around 80% men and 20% women. The rest of this segment is just not really attracted to the very male poker and casino proposition. And what has been the fastest growing proposition in this area have been bingo. So it's bingo with the softer casino games that has been capturing this additional audience, and there has been a few companies that have been very quick to capitalize on that. We as 888 wanted to close that gap in our offering, but also get a reach directly into that segment. In addition, if you look at the bingo business, it is 99% UK today, but bingo, as you all know, is very popular both in Latin America and in continental Europe, especially the southern part of continental Europe. None of the operators have been able to yet take it because they've all been small companies that could not invest in geographical expansion. We're planning to take this now and offer the same product, same bingo product and the same proposition across other markets in Europe. So we definitely think that this is a great acquisition, not just because it's earning enhancing, not just because it is closing a hole in our product offering, but also because it gives us another tool for geographic expansion, another tool for quick growth, and a great tool to go to an untapped market segment that we can't go after just by going with 888.com. In addition, of course, in terms of the acquisition itself, the fact that it's 99% UK means that the risk level of it is by far lower than other businesses that are for sale out there. We've released all that, so I wouldn't spend a lot of time on it, but we basically, it's an $11.3 million turnover company last year with $5.6 million of net profits, so very, very nice net profit, as you can see. 99% UK focus, predominantly women, 35-plus years old. So this segment of 35-plus year-old women is something that neither we nor our competitors have any input into. And this is something that with this acquisition now, we're basically going to have access to this segment, which is a very fast-growing segment in online gaming. The business model is just to touch on that because it had another strategic importance for us. As we said, we are going for enhancing our offering also through partnerships and enabling others to basically work on our platform and on our service to touch other segments. This company, Globalcom, have been doing exactly that. So in terms of what they're doing, they're offering services to skins and to licensees on a turnkey basis, which is very similar to what we want to do in terms of our partnership approach, which means that not only have we gained good revenue, good profit, and a very good proposition that we can take otherwise, but we also gain more experience into this partnership approach that we're now going to take across to our partnership deals with others. These are some of the websites. They've just released a new version. They have big brands like Mirror, Timeout, Think Bingo, etc. They're a very, very good company, very, very focused, very, very good in what they deliver. And I think that this is a great match because we just bought them at the right time before they needed to make a huge investment to grow internationally. We have the infrastructure to do this without making the same huge investment. It creates a great opportunity for us, and I think it's a great deal for all of us. Regulation. You can't talk about online gaming without regulation, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I'm just going to give you the perspective because I think we've been asked about it very recently, many, many times. So United States, market is completely shut for us. We closed it in October. It's completely sealed. We were the first operator to announce that we were withdrawing from that market. Not very happily, of course, but looking at the bill that passed, we didn't really have any choice. We're today blocking customers not just based on country of registration, but also based on payment method and based on IP address. So we're basically getting no U.S. customers in. Clearly, there are some lights ahead, like the WTO rulings and the WTO challenges and the Barney-Frank initiatives, which are all very good stuff. And, you know, we're very happy to see that there may be some moves toward regulation rather than prohibition. However, this is not the basis of our strategy. When this will happen, we'll be very glad to continue serving our 20 million customers that we left behind. But we're currently focusing on growing the business outside the United States, and we don't see this as a cornerstone of our strategy. If it will happen, believe us, we'll know what to do to capitalize on it immediately. In terms of Europe, this has been a critical year in Europe, not only because of the Placanica, or however you say that ruling, which enhances the Gambelli one and basically says that limiting European operators from working across the EU is illegal. But also I think that it's been critical year because we started seeing that member states understand that protecting the monopoly is not going to be something that they can do for a lot longer, and starting to talk about a regulatory environment. We've seen, of course, the UK. We're seeing Italy, where we acquired the license. We're seeing Belgium, where there's a proposed bill that will be presented in the coming month. We've seen Spain with the initial licensing, still local, but a good indication. We're seeing Poland moving towards such a regime. And I think that in the coming years, we'll see most of Europe going to a regulated rather than prohibited environment, which is exactly what we want. This is exactly what we've been saying, that it's the proper way for the industry to evolve. And we think that while this does not indicate that we wouldn't have any regulatory problems in the coming month or the coming years, because some states are clearly going to continue opposing to opening the market, I think that the overall direction is very good. Also, across the rest of the world, we're seeing very, very positive indications. Places like the Philippines, like Singapore, like Macau are opening themselves for licensing. I think that everybody is starting to understand that this is not a phenomenon you can stop. This is not an extension of offline gaming. As we constantly say, this is a new form of entertainment. This is a way for people to enjoy the excitement of casino-like games when they're at the comfort of their homes, or P2P games like poker at the comfort of their homes. This is not something that's going to disappear. And the only way countries are going to be able to deal with that is through regulation. We welcome any such regulation, and we'll continue monitoring the situation, of course, to see how we can monetize on each one of these opportunities. You will definitely see us doing and taking advantages of any regulatory opportunity that we will see in the coming years. This is a real key to our future success. These are defining moments from the regulatory perspective for the industry, but I'm very glad to say that overall, despite the setback of the United States, I think the overall direction is going in the right direction. That's at least our feeling. Current trading. So we gave Q1 KPIs. In March, a bit more about current trading. There's been record turnover in March for non-US operations. NGR, as we said, grew 16% in Q1, which is great. Every daily turnover is 20% higher during the period. Well, you can just read that. That includes some of the April figures. But it just shows that April continued to deliver. Clearly, we are expecting the seasonality. If you recall, online gaming business usually, at least for the big companies, have been relatively stable across Q2 and Q3 and growing again in Q4. We're working hard to make it better than that. But we know that this is, you know, as global warming continues, we have a tough competitor to fight against, which is nice weather outside. But we'll continue working on that and on the cooling effects, etc. But other than this, the business continues to deliver well and current trading continues to be strong. I think that with looking at what we've done in Q1, looking at April, looking at the Bingo acquisition, looking at what we're going to deliver to the market in the coming month, we're quite confident that 2007 is going to be a good year for us. So in summary, before we go to questions, and as usual, I've been too long, although I thought I wouldn't be. 2000 performance is very good despite of the U.S. setback in terms of profit, in terms of growth outside the United States, etc. 2007, like any year after such a setback, is a challenging year, but with a very good start for the year that we're very happy about. We've got a very clear strategy that we decided to outline in the CEO statement of our annual report and also in this presentation to ensure that everybody gets a clear visibility of what we're planning to do. There are a few strategic shifts that we think are going to be critical for our growth. We think that they're quite innovative. We think that they're good. We think that they're going to help us deliver on our promises. I think we have a world-class management team and employees. I didn't want to bother you with the kind of people we recruited into the company, but just to give you a heads up, our head of marketing is a former MD from Johnson & Johnson, who worked before in Unilever and worked before in the internet industry, so somebody that really understands marketing. Our new head of offering is a business unit manager and an MD in Avaya, in the application side, so somebody that understands how to manage products, how to develop new products, how to do it quickly. We're really going for a world-class management team to enhance the good management team that we had before, and I think that we're in a very good position in that perspective. And in terms of dividend, while we are very happy to have an 8.88 number, I think it's in line with the declared policy, and it is coming to show that we've had a very good year last year. We want investors to enjoy that as well. Thank you very much. We'll now take questions.
Crikey. It's a very loud James Hollins from Daniel Stewart. The Q1 marketing cost, I was wondering if you could give some colour on those. It's 32.5% of gaming revenue for the full year. I'm wondering what that percentage was or a number was for Q1. Could you remind me what this stated dividend policy was? You say it's continuing. I just wanted to know what it was. And also, can you give some numbers on the bingo side, either the revenue itself or just the growth it's showing currently? That'd be great.
Well, let's start one by one. The marketing, we don't give quarterly updates on costs, but it's enough to say that we're keeping marketing costs well inside the ranges that we're trying to contain it in 2006. You're not going to see us going up to 40 or 50% marketing cost of NGR, no way. We're very happy with the rate we had in 2006, and we're aiming for something which will be in line with that. In terms of dividend policy, we have declared a dividend policy of at least 50% of profits. This year we're a bit above that. The reason that we're a bit above that, and that's because we gave a special dividend in the interims, and we give a bit more now than just 50%, is because it's been a tough year on investors. It's a very shaky industry, and we thought investors would appreciate getting a bit more than just a stated policy. And that's the reason for this. But overall, we're practically in line with that 50% structure. In terms of the bingo, the deal is not closed yet, so we would not really, we've announced signing. We're now in the process of closing. We can't yet comment on the business, which is not ours. It's enough to say that Q1, they saw very, 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 very nice growth. Does that answer the question? It's a fast-growing business. Clearly, it's easier to be a fast-growing business when you're a smaller business, but it's really a fast-growing business, and bingo is continuing to boom, I think, in the UK at the time being.
Andy Lee from Dresden Klein. A few questions, if I can. Just can you give us some steer on where you think the margin may well go? You've got 11% in for non-US business in 06, but obviously one would assume it would rise significantly, but it's difficult from the results to get a steer on whether you're going to be sort of 20, 25 or a little bit higher. That would be helpful. Just in terms of marketing, I see your affiliates are down as a percentage of total spend. If you look at Party, obviously they're ramping that up. Can you just give us your reasons why you're doing what would appear to be something quite different to Party? Blackjack, can you give us the run rate of dollars per day? Or a number of the contributions to Q1 would be great. And then in terms of interest, I noticed it's quite a big figure. I just wondered whether it was all cash interest income or whether there's an exchange translation impact there.
Let's start with margins. We're not going to give you a guideline on margins, but it's definitely not going to stay at what the what's stated there as an accounting policy analysis of what you can allocate and what you can't allocate. I think if you look back at the kind of margins that companies had when they were at the $200 million level, we want to be ahead of that. This is what we want to be, meaning that we want to be more effective than we were then. I think that's enough to say. Okay, that's one thing. In terms of affiliates, I'll start with a bit of a classification comment. I'm not sure because, unfortunately, I don't have a good analysis of parties' marketing channels, which maybe you could help me by showing them to me. But But if you can't, I'm not 100% sure that we classify things exactly the same thing. I'll give you an example. When we have an online campaign and the publisher gets a higher payment if a customer buys in, we still call it an online campaign. They may call it an affiliate. So I'm not saying that this is the case, but I just don't know. So really comparing apples to apples may be a bit difficult. Having said that, affiliates have been traditionally something that we have been a bit slower percentage-wise on, but that's only because we've got a very strong internal affiliate. So our online marketing and our search engine optimization and our viral marketing teams are basically doing the work that in other companies is done by affiliates. So I'm really not sure I can compare that. Having said all that, I think that the party's affiliate program is a very good one, and we aspire to be as good, if not better. And, you know, this is something we're going to focus on. They're definitely doing a great job on affiliates. Blackjack run rate, Avian, do you remember?
It's in the region of $25,000 a day, roughly.
It's stabilized in that region. And clearly, very quickly, this is going to go away as a question, because it's not going to be blackjack, it's going to be casino. Because right now, customers get all the casino games, not just blackjack. And we expect to be able to generate more because each customer, if maybe I don't like blackjack, maybe I like to do a round of slots on a millionaire genie, because maybe, you know, by just putting in a dollar, I can make $1 million as I play poker. So we expect to be able to give to specific customers their preferred proposition in a way that will increase the casino in poker, what we call casino in poker revenue, which is basically the cross-sell revenue of the unified offering. Lasting interest, Vyant?
On page 14 of the cash flow statement, we state that interest received is 4.9 million. This is cash.
So just on going further into that margin issue, just on R&D spend, would that be similar levels
to what, to last year?
Yeah.
Again, this is not something we're going to say, but you can assume that we're going to be a lot more effective in doing marketing. So there's lots of things we want to do, but last year we've spent around $19 million, and you know we're going to be more effective this year.
Thanks.
Not saying they will deliver less, of course.
Charles Hall from Panglers. Could you just say how many of the poker customers have actually played the blackjack product, and also whether you've seen any change in trend in those customers that have played in their poker revenues?
In their poker revenues. So the first question, and that's, the first thing I'll answer, which is the most important one, and I'll try to pass the other one to Aviad because I don't remember the number, is that basically we have not seen a downward shift in the money people spend on poker because they play on blackjack. And this is critical, of course, because had there been cannibalization, we would have to double think our strategy. What we have seen is that people spend the same thing on poker and on top of it spend on the casino games. Now, we have, I'll share with you a bit of internal info. We've delayed the introduction of blackjack into poker to the entire population because this was something we were scared about. So while people told us, don't worry, I'll just play blackjack with you instead of going to another casino, we've asked people, that's what they said. We wanted to make sure that this is the case. Like everything that we do in the company, every new thing that we put out, we do what we call a test. This test is basically, we've got an analytical team that basically takes a test group and a control group and basically gives them randomly this new proposition versus old proposition, and we test it. It was very apparent that these people did not play less poker. And this is something that we've done for a few months to ensure that we're not going to lose poker revenues because of that. And this is basically something that we're very happy about, because otherwise the entire strategy of offering a unified offering would have been questionable. Apparently, many of these customers play casino somewhere else. Okay, and many of the casino customers play poker somewhere else. And, you know, many of the party poker players play casino somewhere else and don't play with the poker but with party casino, because otherwise party casino would have been a lot bigger. What we're doing now, when we're offering all of it at the same place, is that clearly there's still going to be some people that are going to be in love with some other proposition and they're going to continue playing poker with us and casino with somebody else. But we'd like this to be minimized. In terms of the numbers, Aviad.
In Q1, about 30,000 poker players also played the blackjack from the poker client.
And what proportion of the poker players have had access to blackjack?
Not well, all of them through the end of Q1, but not all of them at the beginning. So it's going to be relatively difficult to, because the test extended through Q1. So I can't really tell you. I think at the end of it, everybody had access, but it's not everybody had access across the quarter. It's not a number we analyze. So it's not that I try to hide anything. Okay. Funny thing is that we've actually had a few customers that downloaded poker and played only blackjack, like 20 customers. We're trying to understand what's wrong with them.
Jane Ansel of Edison. And I wanted to ask two questions. Firstly, the poker retention rates, where, unsurprisingly, perhaps we did see a drop-off at the end of 06 compared with 05. Can you talk us through what you thought was happening, whether you were losing the high-yield players onto the PokerStars-type sites, and what's happened since the beginning of this year? And secondly, on third-party software developers, how many you're actually using, how many you're planning to use, how that's going to roll out?
Okay. On poker retention, being that this is an annual analysis, we're not doing this every month. So telling you how is this going to change in terms of Q1, it's going to be very difficult. What we saw clearly at the end of the first of 2006 is that there has been a shift in the way in the population based on this, on cutting off the United States. We clearly, at the beginning, immediately, we had less high tables, like everybody else that dropped out of the United States. We had less liquidity immediately. We had less high tables. And we shifted the proposition completely and we offered micro tables and small things that we thought Europeans would like more to help us grow the business quicker. And we sort of dropped the thought of, is it going to be more from the old customers or the new customers? What we really focused on getting more active customers. I'm very happy to say that while you did see this shift at the end of 2006, we definitely saw an increase in active members, which is visible in the Q1 KPIs, which is a critical thing because we were focusing on getting more people. I mean, if there was one thing that I think all of you, well, all of us were a bit worried about, and when I was asked last time, I couldn't say for 100% that I'm sure about, is that whether there is a critical mass issue, meaning that below a certain level, we cannot continue growing it. And I think that there's been various speculation, and there's all been good speculation because nobody could actually know whether if you take away from our poker proposition to American customers, whether that's going to be interesting enough for others to actually stay or whether they're all going to drift somewhere else. Luckily for us, and maybe not just luck but also a bit of hard work, we managed to convert the customer experience to something that was attractive to many others and recruit many more customers that basically increased the number of active players actually quicker than in rates than we created before. So altogether, this question is now put to rest. We just need to continue growing to be happy with that. In terms of third party, we currently have, as we wrote in the presentation, that the first integrated third party game is going to be launched in Q3, late in Q3, which means that there's at least one software provider working with us, and we are in negotiations with a few others. Clearly, just to make this very clear, we're not talking about us moving to Playtech or anything like that. We're talking about using our infrastructure and buying specific games into our infrastructure that will enable us basically to present more offerings to more players. Okay, we're very much in love with our software. We think it's very good.
Just on sports, can you just give us update
yep.
on how you're going to roll that out, risk management software, all that sort of stuff?
Sure. To start with, I have to admit that if there was one thing, I think, well, I'll take a step backwards. One thing that I'm very proud of is that we delivered on 06 and Q1 results, even with the Ladbrokes negotiation hanging around. And I think that was a huge effort on anybody in the company to sort of distinguish between the non-operational business aspect of the business and basically trying to negotiate a corporate transaction. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this, and I'm sure that there may be some questions about that, the reason I'm mentioning this is because if there was only one thing that got damaged somewhat by that, delayed a little bit, is sports. Because if there was one thing that Ladbrokes, we kept saying, well, if there's a deal with Ladbrokes, there's no point of doing tomorrow, is launching sport. And that's why basically our intention of having sport basically in a couple of months is going to be delayed by just a couple of months. Having said that, we're still extremely serious about having sports as one of our proposition. We know today that 70% of our customers, I'll repeat the number, 70% of our customers from recent survey place bets on sports events. Now, we don't know what's their lifetime value as sports customers, but we know that they do place bets, which means that they're going somewhere else, and that somewhere else today offers them also poker and casino because everybody else does. So we really need to make sure that we can give them a good sports offering as well. And this is a specific project that we have running. It will be launched in 2007. We're unhappy that it was a little bit delayed, but we're not going to let this stop us. And there will be a sports proposition. By the way, not to mix it with the Italian sports proposition, because the Italian license calls for working with local software providers controlled by the government, etc., which is a different thing. So we're going to have a sports proposition in Italy with local partner, which is different than the global sports proposition that we're going to have.
Will sports, therefore, at the early stage, be a drag on profits this year? A drag on profits.
Drag on profit.
Would you? Because you're going to have to invest a reasonable amount.
Well, if I just said that 70% of our customers place bets on sports. So if I'm only going to say, hey, guess what? You can use the same wallet, the same software, and the content of sports that we're going to give you, and all of that, to basically just now from the same software client, without downloading anything else, also placing bets on sport. That costs me nothing. It's not going to be a drag. If anything, it's going to be an uplift.
So you'll buy in the odds, or you'll make the odds yourself?
Well, we're not in a position to tell you this right now. But it is, of course, a very good question, and we looked at both options.
I'll bite on Ladbrokes. Eustace Santa Barbara, Bradshaw Asset Management. Commenting on Ladbrokes, could you say why the negotiations were entered into, why they ultimately failed, and if there's a chance of revival? And then, furthering the consolidation theme, maybe you could discuss what you believe to be the longer-term prospects in the industry. And then a couple of questions on the geography, because geographically speaking, because you mentioned the P&L for each country, etc. Maybe you could comment specifically on Turkey and potentials also for Macau, how you see that market developing.
Okay.
And then a very hypothetical one, were the US to exhibit some form of regulation as opposed to prohibition, what sort of market share might 888 be aiming for? I know this is quite a hypothetical one.
Where?
In the US. Exactly. And then lastly, maybe you could, just one more. And then maybe you could comment on what you believe to be the long-term sustainable growth rates for the industry. Thank you. I know that's a bundle. Thank you.
Well, I'll start wearing my prophecy hat. Let's start with the easy ones. What's going to be the easy? Well, Ladbrokes. Negotiation entered because they saw the benefit of the synergies between the companies. They have a strong online business based on their brand and their customer base. We definitely know, I think, how to run an online business more effectively and better, because this is what we do for a living. They saw the potential synergy. They're currently paying third-party software providers that they shouldn't have if there would have been a deal with us, and they saw the synergy of this. And that brought them to a point in which, looking at our price after US closed, looking at the benefits, they thought that this could be a good idea. We looked at our price back then. We looked at the kind of proposal that they were willing to give us. We looked at the cash consideration, etc., and we thought that that may be relevant for us. What happened then, and by the way, one other thing you need to remember, that was sort of made public extremely early in the process. So while it seems as if it's been going on for years, because usually when the first time you read on it, you say, oh, they've been probably talking for half a year. I think the first thing that was written in the press was Chris Bell traveling for a first meeting in Israel or something like that. So, and that was before the first meeting. So clearly, you know, that was what you call an early sneak preview of something. So overall, the process took what it usually takes to public companies to sniff around and understand what they want to do together. It has been, I think, a very professional process on both sides. We got to a good understanding of what are the benefits, what are the synergies. And then what started holding the negotiations back is a couple of things. The first thing is that we have been starting to deliver. We started delivering better than expected. So our strategy started paying back, which meant that price was going up. That's one thing. Second thing is that share price started going up because performance was going up. And basically that means that their price was going to go up as well. And in addition, like any smaller company, we're more agile and we're more flexible when it comes to regulatory risk and moving according to it. And, you know, we can decide to open a market today and close a market tomorrow. And, you know, this is the kind of business we do. We think that there's a higher risk. We think that there's a new thing coming out. We change this. We don't take this too heavily. And I think that Ladbrokes, as a bigger company, and as they should, we're a bit concerned with making such huge investment into what seems to be yet a not very stable environment. So, you know, we just said that Europe is doing very well, but still that does not mean that there's not going to be any challenges in the coming year. We just said that we're seeing some positive developments in some regions, but there are other negative developments in others. So when they looked at making this huge investment, this was taking a long time. We were feeling at the end of the day that this is becoming too much of a burden at this point. Rather than just saying, that's it, we said that we amicably decided to park the discussions at this point. The logic, the business logic still exists. It may still come back one day, but we're currently not negotiating. I think that was a very professional process on both sides, and I'm extremely happy to say that, unlike in other situations that I've seen, it did not harm our performance, our operational performance in any way, as you can see in the numbers. So that's Ladbrokes. Turkey. We currently do not accept customers from Turkey. This has been a while now. It's a very insignificant part of our business, less than 1%, so we didn't make a big issue out of it. We are a law-abiding company, and as such, whenever there is a very clear rule against online gaming, we'll evaluate it, we'll look into it with local counsel, we'll look at trade issues and European regulation issues, etc., and when we feel that it's not appropriate for us to work there, we'll stop. Just to remind you, we're talking about $157 million that we've done outside the United States in 2006. Just the UK betting market is billions. So the potential is still infinite. Why would we want to go into a position in which in a minor market there's a problem? Turkey, we think, by the way, in general, is a market that is going to reopen at a certain point. So, you know, we're waiting. That's not an issue for us. Macau, and of course, as a stepping point toward China, is of course very interesting. We have been very excited to hear that they want to grant licenses. Clearly, everybody's sort of waiting still to see what does the licenses mean in terms of China. Does it have any bearing? We're looking into some innovative partnerships inside China, and this is definitely a market that we're very interested in. Having said that, don't expect to see China as 50% of our revenue next year. This is going to take a long, long time. Problems of payment methods, problems of taking money out, you know, all the normal problems of working online in China are still there, have not been yet resolved. So very interesting, very promising for the future, but not there for 2007 and 2008. Market share in the United States, it would be stupid not to say 100%, right? But we have a more than 20 million customers, registered customers that we left behind. Many of them wrote us it will sound a bit cynical, but they actually wrote us sad letters when we stopped servicing them. They wrote us that they enjoyed playing with 888 for many years. They feel part of the brand. They're sad that we stopped serving them. I'm sure at least some of them will be very glad to continue being 888 customers. We'll be looking to have at least the same market share that we had before, and probably a lot more. If the market reopens. Last thing, growth rates. This is still an incredibly fast-growing business. And you've got to remember that growth here means two things. There is revenue growth and there is profit growth. Revenue growth is still potentially huge for various reasons. The first thing is that broadband penetration continues to grow across the world. And there's a direct tie-in between broadband penetration and online gaming growth. Second thing is that many regions in the world that today people do not yet have means of paying over the internet, this is going to be resolved. So if you look at areas like China, like Brazil, where people don't have credit cards, there are more and more local solutions that enable you to pay online. So this is another growth factor. In addition, localization means that you're going to reach more customers that are more interested. Clearly, poker is not that interesting to somebody in Singapore, perhaps. So there are local games that are more interesting. And you will see that we can get more out of customers because of that. So there's still huge, huge growth potential. And there's double growth in that because remember that the business model is that when revenues grow, profit grows by far more. And that is because the extra table, we don't need to call the carpenter, we don't need to paint anything on it, we don't need to buy a new deck of cards. And that's the beauty of the business model. So I still think that we still see we can still see quite significant growth in the coming years. In addition, without undermining any of the smaller competitors, I think that we're seeing that size does matter in that business from various perspectives. Clearly, the bigger you are, the more profitable you are. The more profitable, the more you can buy in terms of marketing, in terms of buying competitors, etc. But it's not only this. We are seeing that reliability is a key thing here. Trustworthiness is a key thing here. Being a recognized brand is a key thing here. And when you're a small operator, it's just impossible to build. When we asked the Globalcom people, why didn't you not go into other markets, they said that they, when they looked at the cost of going into other markets, it's just huge. We're behind that curve. Big competitors are behind that curve, and we can actually continue monetizing on it. Small operators are going to have a tough time. So I think that for the bigger companies in the industry, there's still a huge room for potential, whatever that means, whatever huge means. Additional questions, anyone? Okay, so guys, thank you a lot for coming over. Let me just reiterate, we had a great 2006 despite the US setback. Very good first quarter. I think we have a very coherent strategy, and I welcome you to come here in half a year and see how we're progressing on it. Thank you very much.